So this, like I say, comes out at least of a reading of The Lord of the Rings and thinking through from something that Tolkien had had done in the story that made me think about foresight. And this, you know, kind of looking at our not only our study in Romans that we haven't been doing for a couple of weeks anyway, but also the education hour study in the canons of Dort, right, and the sovereignty of God as applied in salvation, which is what the canons of Dort are all about, and the great boogeyman of foresight in all of this. And I think in Christians' minds, they think foreknowledge means foresight, and then they go from there and start trying to figure out what happens and how God knows things and how he knows our actions that are free or whatever, those sorts of questions that come out of it. So this education out of us and such as it is along those lines and kind of thinking about what foresight is and how God knows things. How is it God knows? What is the way in which God knows something? And is it different from how we know things? And I think the obvious answer is yes, it's different. There are points of similarity. There are even points of identity with God's knowledge and our knowledge. For instance, God knows this recording device.
Hello, radio audience.
He knows this recording device. Do you know the same one? Is your knowledge identical at this point, that this is the same recording device known by you and God? And the answer is, yeah, it's not a different recording device God knows, but he knows it differently. The knowledge of God is a different kind of knowledge, and he has this knowledge differently than we do. And it's worth some time, even at a simple level, just to kind of move some pieces and get some clarity right from the beginning on how God knows things and how we know things and what the difference is. So that's a little bit of what we're doing here. We will see. So Isaiah 46, a wonderful chapter. We're getting there. So just this passage here, starting at verse 8, looking at verse 10 in particular, but remember this and stand firm. Recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, from the ancient times, things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose, calling a bird of prey from the east, the man of my counsel from a far country. I have spoken, and I will bring it to pass. I have purposed, and I will do it. Okay, so here's a statement of God through the prophet Isaiah that, just saying it that way, God knows the end from the beginning. Right? He knows where it's all going. He knows what's going to happen. He knows everything all the way down to the end, and he knows it from before the beginning. Okay? So look again, verse 10, declaring, not just knowing, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times those things not yet done. Okay, so we're not only talking about knowledge of things, we're talking about knowledge of actions. We're talking about knowledge of creatures doing things and God accomplishing purposes, knowing all the way from the beginning, the very end. Okay, now when we talk about ourselves knowing from the beginning to the end, what do we mean? Like, for instance, I was just having a conversation about a marriage that maybe has broken up or is having problems years ago. It was just a conversation. Now, walking into that, this relationship, just, you know, we're talking about, where there's this marriage that's like, yeah, it's from the beginning, it was kind of tough. You might foresee or you might anticipate that it's going to end badly, right? You might just kind of get a sense of it, these people, and say, this isn't going to go well or something, you know. So you kind of have a sense, or you can kind of guess toward the future a little bit. And some people have better intuition than others and see deep, you know, see into people and things better than others, and maybe can guess forward pretty good, right? They have a pretty good idea about what's going to happen here or there. But that's just us surmising. That's just us kind of pulling pieces together and trying to divine, trying to understand or guess at what's going to happen in the future. Is that how God deals with future or contingent events? Is that how God knows things the way we know or suppose that we know or try to know things? So that's the question we're asking. God knows the end from the beginning. How does he know that? How does God know that? And that, yeah.
Well, it seems like a kind of a borderline crazy kind of question to enter into the mystery of God's knowledge. I mean, his revealed knowledge, his revealed will. So we have that, but
yep.
I know you're not asking for the mysterious, unknowable knowledge.
But that's where theology ends up going, typically, is like to the edge. And Calvin's a great one as far as how he talks about it and kind of what he does is theology. He's like, God's given us this much. And with that much, we can think and work, but where he hasn't gone, we shouldn't go. Right? We shouldn't try to understand things he hasn't revealed to us. It's something Calvin routinely talks about. But theology is also trying to take what God has revealed and understand it and proclaim it. Right? So there's this kind of balance between recognizing how far God has let us understand what's going on, and also trying to understand it. Right, doing the effort of trying to use our minds to understand what God's done. And Christian theology has definitely done that, right? Tried to understand and proclaim and make sense of things like the knowledge of God, which is obviously, from the word go, beyond us, right? This is God and his eternal, unchanging knowledge from himself. What dog do we have in that fight? So we're just creatures down here trying to figure stuff out one step at a time, you know? So trying to understand God is obviously a challenge, but he has revealed himself. He's let us know about him. And so from that revelation, we can begin to work. And I think that's what theology really, really is. Okay, so the illustration I wanted to use to get into was from The Lord of the Rings. And I'm sorry if it's a, like, you know, spoiler, but the movie's been out for a while and the book's been out since like the 50s or something. So I think it's okay if I do a little spoiling, right? Anyway, so they got this ring, and it's got to, like, get, you know, destroyed in Mount Doom. And on the way, they have all kinds of problems, this group of them. And they land in a place called Lothlorien, which is this elven stronghold in Middle-earth. And they're able to rest there and finally keep moving on toward their work. But when they're there, make sure I got her name right, Galadriel. She's the elven queen there. She's the one played by Kate Blanchett in the movies, the elven queen. And she brings Sam, right? So Sam and Frodo down together. And Sam has always been interested in elven magic. Anything elven, he loves. Elven magic in particular. They're just weird creatures, and they do cool stuff, and he's just intrigued. He wants to know about elves and elven magic. Frodo, not quite so. But the two of them are there together, these two hobbits. And Galadriel takes water, fresh water, pours it into this basin. When the fins are, when the sauce moving, it's like a mirror, right? It's like a, you know, flat little mirror of water. And she says, based upon her elven magic, and she says something like, I don't know why you guys call all this stuff magic, because we don't do the same stuff those evil people do over there. But these are powers that we have. But if you want to call it magic, you call it magic, which I think is Tolkien telling us something. Anyway, so Sam, he says, oh, I want to look. She says, you're interested in elven magic? Come look. So he comes, and he's got to lean over and look into the pool, this little pool. And through that, he's going to see stuff. In particular, the future. Now, the pool, and I'll just, I'm not here to tell you about Lord of the Rings so much as to set it up so I can kind of show you what I was thinking. The pool tells all kinds of things, right? It shows stuff that's happened, it shows stuff that is happening, it shows stuff that might happen, and so on. But what they're really worried about, as they're looking into, is what's going to happen in the future. Can we see the future, right? Can we see what's going to happen? And that's what they want. Now, I thought, oh, well, that's a good example of foresight. Looking into this little pool and seeing what's going to happen. Not making it happen, not deciding it should happen, none of that, just noticing, just becoming aware that something's going to happen. Okay? That's foresight. And it's pretty thin, isn't it? Right? It's not like in knowing it somehow you control it now. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. In knowing it somehow it controls you now is more kind of how it goes. And in the story, Sam sees, like, you know, the Shire getting torn down and trees getting knocked down. This gets kind of like nasty future, and it almost knocks him off course where he's going to leave and go back home, save the Shire, even though he's sworn to be with Frodo and to accompany him. And so he finally, in dejection, sits down with his head in his hands and says, okay, I'll go with Frodo. If I ever get back home, someone's going to catch it hot. And off he goes. But then Galadriel asks Frodo, do you also want to look? And he kind of can't help himself. He's like, I don't know if I should or shouldn't, but I sure want to. And so he does, right? Because there's this desire to kind of to see, to know, to understand the future, to get a glimpse of it, right? So there's this, and then anyway, that's the point, though. It's just these guys hoping to get a glimpse, just a little glimpse into the future to understand the way things are going to be. Because Galadriel has this power where she can make this water do stuff, and they can have a little peep into the future. Does God have a real big reflecting thing where he can kind of see everything at once and just knows the future, because he can perceive it? the way Frodo was able to perceive things, or Sam was able to perceive things in the future with them. Is that just foreseeing them? And when Christians say, oh, foreknows, when God foreknows us, that just means he sees us ahead of time. He understands ahead of time that we're going to believe, and then therefore he elects us based upon the foreseen faith that we have. Well, that's God looking into the pool, seeing what's going to happen, and then deciding he's going to do that. Do you see that? It's God seeing the future, receiving information, oh, okay, that's going to happen out there, and then stepping back, as it were, saying, okay, good, that's what's going to happen, I decree it. Who's in charge of that? Who rules? Same thing looking, thinking of Frodo and Sam. As they're looking, seeing the future, are they somehow in control of it? So, like I wrote in the notes, who's in charge when foreseeing? The foreseer or the foreseen? Where's the authority lie? In the one who perceives what's going to happen? Or the things themselves that happen? And I think the answer is obvious. The foreseer simply receives the information of what is to be. What is to be is determinate. The foreseer simply foresees it. And again, is that how God knows stuff? And the truth of the matter is, I think probably most Christians that you talk to will have that in mind, something like this. Well, God just kind of all at once foresees everything, knows everything is going to happen. But he foresees it, knows it, because it's going to happen, and he kind of becomes aware of it by looking down, as it were, the corridors of time, or standing, as it were, above time or apart from time, just knowing it all at once, but still as a matter of perception and growing in knowledge by what he sees and understands that way. So that kind of makes sense as far as the way I think that people typically think about foreknowledge, or about even the knowledge of God at all, eternally relative to creation. So just field a couple questions, or I guess Bob's got something to say already. Yeah, he's got a tail wagging the dog, you bet. Absolutely. But I think that's where people land. And I don't think they think it's backwards. And if you kind of show them this backwards, maybe they'll, you know, step back and try to rethink it, which is kind of what I'm hoping to do. Get us a way to kind of think through this and to rethink it and talk to friends and family and, you know.
We've got to find it all out ahead of time.
We're getting there. Oh. Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. Okay, so with God planning it out ahead of time, the kind of dye-in-the-wool Arminianish type will say, yeah, he planned it all ahead of time because he foresaw what you'd do, Bob. He knew you'd believe, so he elected you to believe and planned out your life ahead of time based upon that. And so the real mover and shaker in the whole thing is you, right? You are the one moving and shaking. God's responding to you eternally and unchangeably somehow, right? So that's just to show that does this work? And the answer is no, it doesn't work that way. God's knowledge isn't picked up. Like, we have experiences and gain knowledge from them. Not God. God doesn't do that. Jesus Christ, the God-man, did. Okay, as a human, touching his humanity, absolutely. He had to grow and gain knowledge and grow in wisdom and stature and all the kind of things we read about him in the Bible. Touching his divinity, he's unchanging. God don't change. Okay? So, if that's the case, then his knowledge also is unchanging. At no point is he made aware of something. Right? He's always aware, fully aware. The question is, what is the source of that knowledge? And that's kind of where I want to go here. And using the Lord of the Rings is that kind of image of saying, oh, well, how do you gain this access to this information, and who's really in charge of it when it's going on? That's the connection of the Lord of the Rings. Yeah, Kim. Okay. Okay, so number three here, we'll get into it, and then we'll kind of get into some nitty-gritty at the bottom that I'm not entirely sure I'll be able to do, but we'll see if we can do it together. Okay, number three. God's knowledge is from himself. Okay, the theological term is aseity, which comes from a-say. Okay, a is like ob or from, and say is himself. From himself. God is from himself. Nothing else, nothing beyond God, he is of himself. Doesn't mean he's his own cause. Yeah, that'd be an absurdity to talk that way, because we say, therefore, God is what? Uncaused. He's the uncaused cause. He's the unmoved mover, to grab all Aristotle's kind of talk about the eternality and unchangeability of God. There's no cause. People say, well, if every cause has an effect, then what caused God? Sorry, guys. It's like, well, if you had paid attention to Christianity 101, At any point, you notice that Christians have always said God is uncaused. He is no effect. Okay? Effects are caused. Every effect has an antecedent cause. God is no effect and has no antecedent cause. But he himself is the cause of all things. The uncaused cause. Okay? And as soon as you start to think in those terms, which are classical Christian designations that are drawn from Greek thought, you know, Greek thought and Greek terminology, but as soon as you're thinking in those terms, you're suddenly out of the realm of God being like a big one of us, figuring stuff out and perceiving and seeing what's going on. Although the Bible does talk that way sometimes, about God perceiving and seeing what goes on, right? But the Bible talks about God having hands and arms and other things as well. Right? So God communicates to us and expects us to put on our big boy pants and read the Bible and understand what it means. Not just simply take what it says and say, well, that's all it is. God has hands. Say, well, no, God doesn't have hands, though the Bible presents it as having hands. What are you going to do with that? How are you going to figure out what God's communicating here? And most of that stuff's not that difficult to kind of like sort through and understand how God's communicating to us. Same thing here goes with his knowledge. Okay, so ase means from himself. God knows all things of and from himself. God gains no knowledge from any other thing, because every other thing is merely a creature. Right? A creature is something God has made. God doesn't gain any information, any knowledge from anything that he's made. In fact, it exists and goes because he knows it and has chosen to make it so, has chosen to actually make it come to pass. Okay, so to kind of get at this knowledge of God, this knowledge that's from himself, eternal knowledge, not based upon creation or based upon anything else other than God himself, theologians typically, in this kind of simplest way, break the knowledge of God into two categories, two ways in which we can think about God knowing. And so those are, and then the third one, middle knowledge, which has come up recently, we'll look at the end here. Okay, so first, and you might be irritated by the Latin, the language of the church for many, many, many centuries and talking to each other is Latin. And so theological terminology is almost always Latin and Greek, though we like English translations, which I've given you. So the first one, scientia, or we get the word science from that, as you can see in the first one, really means in Latin knowledge. Scientia is knowledge. So here we have knowledge, the simplicitas intelligi is, so we have simple knowledge of God, simple knowledge. We talk about God being simple. The simplicity of God, if you've heard that doctrine, and what it means is God is uncomposed. He's not brought together of parts. Here's part of God and part of God. You put all together and there you have God. God is indivisible, radically one. And that's the doctrine of simplicity. And his knowledge, just like everything else in him, is just the same. So we have this knowledge of unqualified or uncompartmentalized intelligence is what they call it. Okay, I'll read this little paragraph here. God's complete, unbounded, unqualified, absolute knowledge of himself. Okay, does God know himself? Okay, does God know himself exhaustively? Does he know all of himself? Are there mysteries of God in God? There are plenty of mysteries of God in us. Right? God is very mysterious. God is hard to understand in a lot of ways, and God simply is. But does God fully understand himself? Does his knowledge include exhaustively his infinite self? We're operating in categories that aren't like categories we operate in. Right? We don't have absolute knowledge. We don't have exhaustive knowledge. We don't have infinite knowledge. All that's God's. Right? So I'll read these descriptions again. God's complete, unbounded, unqualified, absolute knowledge of himself and the whole range of possibility. Now, what's that mean, the whole range of possibility? I'm drawing these, by the way. Here's a book. You're welcome to look at it. Theological Dictionary of Latin and Greek Terms. Theological terms drawn from Protestant authors of the scholastic period, so after the Reformation. Which, of course, all these scholars are drawing on the Middle Ages and the early church as well, and the Reformation in their teaching. So anyway, you can come get a look at this. It's been a lot of fun book. Anyone who likes to read the dictionary, this one's even better than the normal dictionary. Okay. The whole range of possibility. So if we can kind of put ourselves, do a little thought experiment of putting yourself before creation, before creation was, before God acted in creation and creating everything outside of himself that wasn't before but became, including time. So the whole before thing is kind of a goofy one. But go back there and think, okay, God hasn't created anything yet. The yet, again, can kind of be talked about, but just we'll just do it in historical terms like we operate. What could God have created? A different world? A different cosmos? A different way? Could he have created us with like three arms, one in the back, so we could like scratch parts of our back that we can't get with our two arms, you know? Some of the frustrations we have as humans, the various things. Yeah, yeah. And it's like we can sit there and think, well, God could have done this, and the grass could have been blue, and the sky, you'll be like, and so guys like Stephen Hawking, right, just died a handful of years ago, right, the astrophysicist and black hole studies and all that, and atheist, one of the famous atheists. He has this idea, and I think I read it in A Brief History of Time was the book. He wrote a lot of that's a popular book, his, where he talks about the multiverse, right? Every variation of every single thing that anyone could ever think of actually occurs in a different universe. And there are basically infinite universes comprising everything that could ever possibly be, and it is, just not in this universe. This universe is in this universe. All the variations of it are somewhere else. And maybe we get there through black holes, or we don't know, but that's kind of the multiverse notion. And an intellectual as powerful as Stephen Hawking held to it. Well, that's just science fiction. It's just a good story. That's all that is. And it's kind of fun to think about. But when we think about the knowledge of God, take that. Does God know every possible contingency of everything that could ever be? Before he creates? Before he makes anything? All of that is in the knowledge of God. God knows it all. Every possibility, every possible contingency. If this happens, then this goes on. But if this happens, then that goes on. God knows it eternally, entirely, absolutely from all eternity of himself. Not because he's seen it, but because of him. Okay, so that's what it means. And this is Richard Muller, by the way, who I'm kind of ripping off when it comes to these definitions, because that's what you want. You don't want me sitting up here defining these things. Okay, I'll read this one again. God's complete, unbounded, unqualified, absolute knowledge of himself and the whole range of possibility. This knowledge is ase, that is from himself, and logically prior to the eternal decree or decrees. Okay, what that means is God has, of all the things he could do, chosen to do certain things. Create this cosmos, for instance, right? God could have created another one, I suppose. He could have not created. All those things are in God's, whatever he wants to, you know. So of all the things God could do, he's chosen to do certain things. And we call those works ad extra, outside of himself. Right? Creation is a work of God outside of himself. There are works of God within the Trinity, within the Godhead, where, and those are, so there's, anyway, theologians distinguish between works ad intra, God within himself doing things, and ad extra, God working outside of himself. Creation is a work ad extra. Okay? It's something God's doing outside of himself. But before God created, before it was time to create, we can talk that way. God had all possibilities in his mind and chose to do this, right? Chose to create this cosmos. Chose to create you, your family. Chose to send his son to redeem wicked sinners whom he chose to create and chose that they would fall. And on and on and on, every detail. Okay? So there's a distinction between God's knowledge of what actually is because he's created it, and God's knowledge of everything that could possibly be, out of which he chose this knowledge, these things. Right? Does that distinction make sense? Any questions on the? And these are really the first two. So I'll finish reading the first one before we review the second. Okay, this knowledge, that is this knowledge of unqualified intelligence, is ase from God and logically prior. So does anyone know what logically prior means? As opposed to temporarily prior, a temporal priority. Something temporally prior has to be there ahead of time. Okay, so if we're going to have my teaching here magnified over the sound system here, beforehand we have to have a microphone to do it, right? There's a temporal order of things. When we talk about logical priority, we're not talking about temporal at all. We're just saying what in our thinking has to be in place in order for this to be in place as well. There's a logical priority. This one has to come first, not in time, because nothing of God is in time anyway. but logically as we think about it and trying to understand what comes first and gives rise to other things. So there's a logical priority to this absolute knowledge of God entirely and of everything he could possibly do that comes logically before what he does. Right? Before God chooses to do what he's going to do, he has all things possible in mind, including extensive, complete knowledge of himself and all possibilities. Okay? That's a logically prior knowledge to the knowledge of what God actually does in creation, which is the second one. So let me read the second one, then we'll pause for questions. The scientia libera, free knowledge, a free and definite knowledge, a voluntary knowledge, voluntary being of God's own will, what he wills to do, a free and definite knowledge, a voluntary knowledge of actual things brought freely into existence by the divine will. What God chose to do. Out of all the things he could do, out of all this vast and extensive absolute knowledge, he chose to do this, and he knows that. And so the knowledge of what he chose to do is distinguished from the knowledge of all the things he could have done. Okay, I think that's a fair distinction, and theologians have moved off that direction. All creation rests upon this divine will. God chose to create, and here we are. Right? So God has all this knowledge, infinite knowledge of himself and all the things he could do. But he also has this free knowledge, a specific knowledge of what he's going to do, what's going to happen, what he's going to create. And all of creation, everything created, depends upon that will of God, because it's by God's will that he created us and everything. And that will is dependent upon the knowledge of God, not just the knowledge of what he's going to do, but the knowledge of all things even possible and who God is entirely. Right. So there's, as you can see, thinking through these, and this is the simplest distinction. They go from there, and they get more complicated. But this is a simple distinction I think is helpful in thinking about God's knowledge. Okay, any thoughts on the first two? God's kind of absolute knowledge of himself, completely knowing himself entirely, infinitely, and all things possible as well that are in God. Any question on that? Because that's the kind of knowledge that we just simply don't have access to. We don't have access to it. Right, that's God's knowledge. It's divine knowledge. We know because he gives us the capacity to learn and know as creatures. He knows because he's the uncreated, uncaused creator and cause of all things. And his knowledge, therefore, is, the type of knowledge and the way God knows befits divinity, where ours befits creation and humanity. So any questions on this distinction between the absolute ase knowledge of God, and then the knowledge of God, this kind of voluntary knowledge of what he's going to do, which is still ase, it's still of himself. It's not like he's drawing that from somewhere else. But it's all from God, but it's within God everything he could do and what he is going to do. There's a distinction there. So, any thoughts, yeah?
So in the ESV, there's at least 160 references to knowledge. We will never know. We can never know all there is to know. And then that the church takes parts of the scripture that says we will know even as we are known.
That's a biggie.
What?
Exactly right.
And God's will is not, he doesn't will that anybody should perish, but that all should come to the knowledge of his Son.
Right.
Wait, what? There's a contradiction.
Sure. Right. So some of this is going to be like looking at particular scriptural passages and say, well, the meaning of will here isn't the same way we're talking. It's a different, there's the distinctions that you're going to.
But knowledge is that way too.
You bet.
It's shrouded in. You're discussing it, and philosophers have discussed it, and
you bet.
What keeps us from erring and going off on any one particular tangent other than the Holy Spirit to guide us and direct us into truth.
You bet.
And the knowledge. There's so many people that are throwing out what all those things that you said. You know, God only knows so much and looks down through the corridors of time, blah, 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 stuff. And it's kind of scary. The potentials for falling off the path.
Yeah, the potentials for falling off into heresy are many. They're legion all the time, everywhere, which is why we have to have Bible in hand, why we have to have the Holy Spirit in our heart, and do it together. And do it together through the long history of God's people who've been working on this and thinking about it as well. Not because they're always all right, they're not, but they've gone before and can help us. And the creeds are our greatest friends in that regard. the centralizing kind of like endoskeletal kind of things of the church, that those creeds function that way. Like our skeleton holds us up, and anyway, these creeds are similar. So having Bible in hand, Holy Spirit in heart, together through the history of the church, and having the creeds in front of us as well, these are all helpful things for us not to go off the rails. Because it's simple and easy to do, and people do it all the time. And maybe a comment about the first thing is a great deal of humility when it comes to what we know and can know. Not even just about God. What can we know about the infinite, the eternal, and the unchangeable? What he reveals to us that we can know. But what can we know about anything? What is the possible extent of human knowledge? Right? I think all of us sitting here would, you know, say, hey, could you know everything about creation? And we'd all say, I don't think so. Say, hey, could you know everything about biology? Could you just be an absolute expert in biology and know everything about it? And you think, probably not, right? Not even a single discipline could we exhaust the knowledge in. So think of the hubris of the Enlightenment thinkers, the French philosophers and the encyclopedists, who say, we can capture all knowledge in our encyclopedia. We can know everything and put it down on paper and pass it on. That's what they're trying to do. Because God's out of the picture. The infinite's out of the picture. We're just temporal beings in a temporal world. We can figure it out. And we have this and it's amazing expanse of knowledge they get. Those encyclopedias are tremendous. And you buy a copy of Encyclopedia Britannica from a traveling salesman at some point, or your mom did, or something like that. Anyway, those encyclopedias are very helpful in categorizing and bringing knowledge together. One of a great benefit out of the godless Enlightenment. But I just want you to see the hubris of those Enlightenment philosophers and the encyclopedists thinking we can have it all. We can know everything there is to know if we work hard enough because we're rational creatures. And we can do it, right? So there's this hubris and this like pride that's built into human conceits. But I think as Christians, we got to be knocked down a number of pegs below that in our understanding of knowledge. And so back to this distinction of God's absolute knowledge and God's kind of specific knowledge of what he's going to do in history and takes care of all of the historical realities. Then that's where we are, where the encyclopedia is saying, hey, we can have all this knowledge. That's just history, let alone God himself and all the things he could have done. So there's that distinction. People are kind of staring at me. We all get it. Yeah.
And of the things that we can know, we pass by it. We neglect it. As we're told that my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. But even the things that we can know, to some degree, I don't want to know that.
Yeah. Well, that's a much harder... Yeah, so one's just simply finitude, right? We can say we're finite, we're creatures, and we can't know everything because God's infinite and we're finite. Okay, no problem there. But when we have things that we can know that God's given, and remember he says that Deuteronomy 29:29 isn't just, hey, there are secret things, but it's like there are things that have been revealed, and there are secret things of God. Those secret things aren't yours, they're God's. But what has been revealed is for you and for your children. Go with it, right? And so, hey, kids. Back table back there, other ones. You've been given these gifts. You adults, you've been given the gift of the knowledge of Jesus Christ and the knowledge of Scripture and who God is. Do you despise it? Do you not really care to increase your knowledge of God and the things of God? And that should be convicting because often enough, that's just it. We don't care. We can't be bothered. We'd sell our birthright for a mess. A pottage. Let's use the old King James language. So that's the temptation we have as Christians, is to take these awesome things, this birthright we've been given of the knowledge of God and who he is in Christ Jesus, and despise it and think nothing of it. Think other things are more important. That's the temptation I think we all have. Okay, I'll get at this middle knowledge because I got 5 minutes. That'll be enough time. And because it's kind of popped up on the radar. In fact, well, you were talking about a debate, and I don't know, somehow Molinism has come up here, I don't know what, in the last like month or two, and it pops up everywhere. It's like whack-a-mole, and suddenly there are a bunch of Molinist moles waiting to get whacked. So anyway, this middle knowledge comes from a couple Jesuit scholars out of the Reformation, in the Reformation time, and they're looking at, again, in these categories we're talking about the absolute knowledge of God, the simple absolute knowledge of God on the one hand, but also this volunteer knowledge of God, knowledge of his will, or his free knowledge, as they call it. And these theologians say, well, can we put something in between that, in between those two things, God's absolute knowledge and God's knowledge of what he is going to do and what history is and what he's created and all this sort of thing? Is there a place in the middle here where we can have some freedom on this side to detach us from the absolute knowledge of God on this side and make a place in the middle where God kind of knows about somehow, knows about contingencies, knows what could happen, and make this place in the middle where it's not the absolute knowledge of God, it's not even the specific knowledge of God about creation, but to open up a place where we can have freedom of movement as humans apart from the sovereignty of God and his absolute knowledge. So they're trying to open up a place for human autonomy, apart from the sovereignty of God, apart from the knowledge of God, apart from the decree of God. Right? That's what they're trying to do. And they find a ready Protestant player to grab onto that, whose name's James Arminius, Jacob Arminius. Anyway, Arminius grabs onto Molinism and the middle knowledge and makes much of it because it serves his purposes about getting out from under the absolute sovereignty of God. Because people don't dig that. You notice that? They want to be God. God. He can be God, kind of, in weird, smaller ways, but to be God, to rule over us, to decree from all eternity what your life is and what you will do and what you will think and how you will act is too much for people, especially when they see it as a zero-sum game, like God hasn't created this place in such a way as to give us freedom to do what we want to do and so on. They think that if God's sovereign, there is no freedom. And if we're free, then God can't be sovereign. So there's got to be a place in the middle, and that's what middle knowledge does, or scientia media, right? Just middle knowledge. Knowledge is something in the middle. God's knowledge, not of, his own knowledge of himself, his absolute knowledge, or of what he's going to do, the specific knowledge of creation, but somewhere in the middle where he kind of knows things about it, but it gives us room to kind of move around. So let me read the actual definition. This I took directly from Moeller. The other ones I kind of condensed. This one I just took because it seemed like a good idea to do. A third category, introduced by Fonseca and Molina, both Jesuits, and picked up by Arminius and his followers. This is where the actual quote starts. Middle knowledge is a term used to describe a category in the divine knowing according to which God has a conditioned or consequent rather than an absolute and antecedent foreknowledge of future contingents. Now, you probably want to read that a couple times. There are some words in there that might be difficult. I'll read that second part. So middle knowledge is a term used to describe a category in the divine knowing. So in the way God knows things, right? We're talking about these categories about divine knowledge, how God knows. Here's a third category about how God knows things. according to which God has a conditioned or consequent. Okay, conditioned or consequent. Well, consequent is probably an easier word. What does consequent mean? Okay, yeah. So it's something that's happened in order, and the consequent follows, right? The antecedent precedes. The consequent follows. It's like in a conditional, like we're working on challenge B for CC. The conditional: if I preach, then you'll fall asleep. Okay, something like that. If is the antecedent, and consequent is based upon the antecedent, then you'll fall asleep. If then, right? Kind of if then setup. And that's what's going on here. God knows as a consequent, right? And he doesn't know beforehand. He gains the knowledge, right? He looks and sees. He picks it up. It's conditioned by his creation, the knowledge, okay? So he knows because we do. He knows because he sees us doing something like that, right? This kind of basic, goofy Arminian thing that you hear all the time. That's what's kind of going on here in a very sophisticated way with a lot of Latin and a lot of particular terms that kind of like are foggy. But at the end of the day, that's what's going on. There's a place there where God is not sovereign. He has, as my campus pastor in college, Assemblies of God campus pastor, said, what if God just decided not to know? And therefore, because he's decided not to know, we can have some freedom. And that's his answer to the quandary. Well, that's kind of what's going on here. And the answer to that is, well, what if God decided not to be righteous? Just to give us, or whatever. What if God decided not to be holy? What if God decided not to be any part of who he is? Does God change that way? Does he limit himself and what he knows? He certainly will limit himself what he does ad extra, right, to us. He kind of puts his limitations on there. The flood being an example is, I won't destroy the earth again. Is God free to destroy the earth with water again? No, because he's bound himself ad extra not to. But God is certainly free within himself and is bound by nothing. But here is kind of trying to introduce this weird way of kind of fusing those two in a strange way. Vicki, you've been like shooting your hand up over there.
Oh, I just wondered, it's open to me as a kind of a logical
result. Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning, actually, on the way here. Thinking, you know, I wonder if those open theists are doing something similar, because it seems like they are. They're after something similar. If they're doing it the same way, I'm not sure. Open theism has been one of those deals like the King James only controversy that I just scratch my head and think, really? Really? People think that? Crazy. And just move on to things that make more sense to me. So there's that. Yeah.
This is actually what I was going to ask earlier. But so your Galadriel Fool thing was actually pretty helpful. So I'm going to take it to a good thing.
Great. Appreciate it. That's good to hear.
Is this like, you know, these time travel movies, like Back to the Future, right? So you go back and you, like, mess up what's going to happen. Is this like, so God knows, like, no matter what Marty McFly does, right? He knows, like, all the outcomes that'll be. Is that, like...
That's the kind of the knowledge of contingencies, right? So we're thinking in history and time where if something happens, then certain things come from it. If something else happens, then other things come from it. And then you get the trajectory of a different historical continuum in Back to the Future, right? So here's the one where this happened, but then this happened. Now it have this kind of parallel history going on, right?
You with me? So God doesn't know which is going to happen? Is that the idea?
That could be it, yeah. So in absolute knowledge, God knows all that stuff intuitively of himself. But when it comes to this middle knowledge, I'm not quite sure how it's seen, but there's this openness there where God knows what contingently will happen, but he doesn't know what's going to happen. Right? So he knows the contingency. If Kim does this, then this will happen. If Kim does this, this will happen, and this and this. And all these contingencies, God knows them. But somehow in that, and I don't know how, and I hope I'm not misrepresenting, God doesn't know what you're going to do. He knows all the possibilities and everything that come out of them, but he doesn't know what you're going to do. Something like that. Except for maybe looking forward and seeing what you're going to do. So again, it's just opening up this like realm in which we can operate autonomously out from under the absolute knowledge of God and the will of God based upon the knowledge of God, right? They don't want that. Where a Christian should say, let him increase and me decrease, right? May God be true and every man a liar, and things like that, you know. Yeah,
I could be mistaken, but in the debate we listened to, it didn't sound like that quite what he was saying. It was, he knows what she's going to do, but has no control over it, in a sense, in that he plays around with situations. That doesn't play with person.
Okay. And that may be something, too, as far as, like, human autonomy and God kind of backing off that plays in here. But as far as the... Because I'm just looking at the knowledge of God specifically, not necessarily the works, though they're related, because the knowledge of God has to do with what happens in history. Right? There's that relationship there. And that's what this is trying to get at some way or another. So I'm open to that criticism or clarifying it a little bit or whatever.
I'm as lost as you.
Yeah.
Just thinking about the debate that we listened to, and it just sounded like what he was saying was that God does not control or foreordain anything that we do, but he knows what we're going to do under certain circumstances.
Sure. Okay, good. That's probably a good way of thinking about that knowledge where God's kind of backs up, knows all the contingencies and all this stuff, but gives us the freedom, apart from his knowledge, to do it, where the classical Christian, and certainly the Reformed and Lutheran, the Reformation understanding is that God knows all these things. This idea of freedom from the knowledge and will of God is an impossibility. It doesn't work that way. There's no way to get out from under God to have this autonomous freedom. But the way God's made the world is that we have a measure of freedom and independence as creatures, not autonomy. We're not laws unto ourselves. We're still under the law of God. That's to say, under the decree of God and what he's known and decreed will come to pass. Yet we freely participate in it. That's an important thing. I've said it 1,000 times up here, and I think I need to say it 1,000 more because we seem to think it's almost like a zero-sum game. If God knows and has decreed everything that's come to pass, then there's no freedom or action or participation on my part. I just kind of bounce along doing what God has decreed. But that's not how it is, and no Calvinist really talks that way. A foolish Calvinist who doesn't know his stuff and hasn't read talks that way. He's just got a logical idea, and this is it. It's like, yeah, okay, well, do some reading and see how some of the fathers have talked about this. And they don't talk about it that way. They talk about the great mystery of the way God's made things to work, where we freely participate and do exactly what he has eternally decreed that we do. But we do so freely. So there's that great mystery there. I'll finish that definition. Because we had conditioned or consequent knowledge rather than absolute and antecedent knowledge. The absolute and the complete exhaustive knowledge of God, of himself and all possibilities, that's what's in view there. And antecedent is at least logically antecedent before. Like God knows before. In fact, what comes to pass, it comes to pass based upon his knowledge and his will. Not the other way around. That what comes to pass is based upon our knowledge and our will that God somehow, you know, figures out from afar and reacts to. Okay. That's probably enough. I think we're over time. But that's, hopefully, and again, the little pool of Galadriel was my way into thinking about, yeah, well, what is just bare foresight? And it has nothing to do with God. God has no bare foresight on anything. Does he foreknow everything that's going to come past? Know ahead of time? You bet. Absolutely. Of himself. Because he's eternal, almighty God. He knows all things of himself. Everything God is of himself. He's a-say. And that's an important theological concept for us when it comes to the knowledge of God, but also other attributes and dimensions of God when we talk about him. So enough of that, I guess. Come fire questions at me if you want. And also, this book is fun if you want to get a look at it. We'll be hanging around here. Let's have a word of prayer.